Is somebody making an introduction from clever psychology? From
I assembled some.
If not, I can see. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Maybe, yeah. Can I have your hand? Thank you. Who's sitting here?
I was.
You were here. Yeah. Okay.
You want to
go? I need for a touch
of speech. Touch of speech. Good morning, everyone. It's really nice to see you here. The weather warmed up, so today we didn't have to escape icy roads and bad transportation. Welcome to the group, and welcome to Alfred. Thank you so much again for being with us. Today it will be a workshop, and we'll be applying existential analysis theory to ourselves. And this is all about working in small groups, working with each other, hopefully working with Alfred. And this is a small introduction to the course which Alfred will be making here in London from May, professional course, and each of us can be studying from existential psychotherapist. And I'm sure Alfred will tell more about it later on. But today, shall we start?
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a couple of people telling us that they're late, so we'll let the chairs to them. They'll be coming in.
Okay, we have some more chairs here behind. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Alexandra. Alexandra and Julia are the organizers of this venue. Thank you for doing this and for giving us the possibility to meet. And so, and before we start, I also want to introduce to you Joel Foss. He is a leading professor in the meaning concept in London and is working at different universities. Now he changed. Maybe you can say a few words about your investigation and your online training which you are going on to.
Oh, very kind of you. Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah, so I'm currently working at Metanoia Institute, also I've set up my own meaning online. That is actually like an online training and therapy platform where people can receive more training on the long term, and also where people can also give therapy to clients, which is from a very broad perspective, to have all the different people with different meaning-centered backgrounds to be there connected and not choosing one particular branch. But
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And another question, are there any questions regarding the organization? The breaks will be at 11, at 12:30, a noon break for 1 hour, at 3 o'clock a short break, and at 4:30 we stop.
At 11?
At 11, at 12:30, at 3, 12:30, 1 hour break for lunch. Or if you don't have to eat so much, we can make it short. And 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and also I'd like to ask you. Now we have a small theoretical part, and I will transmit this part to Facebook, and it will be translated in existential analysis in UK. Please share this video. I will be very grateful.
And then we will start working. We'll start recording.
Yes.
Yeah, only the theoretical introductory part which I'm giving, and the rest is Japan. Yesterday we had a big audience. Thanks
yes,
to
yes,
your,
around 2,000 maybe more of them. People who are watching. Of course, not. I think not all.
Yeah.
All the video, but parts of this video. So.
They were stepping in. Who wasn't here yesterday? This is just a question to see how much I have to give. Did you follow on the stream? So are you informed? But should,
no.
Should I have to repeat something yesterday? I mean, okay, then. Because the workshop is open also for people who haven't been there yesterday. So I have to check that first.
Yes.
Good morning. Welcome to this practical day. On a Sunday, we are going to work. This is crazy. We should relax and have our free time. This would be possibly more meaningful, but maybe this is an exceptional day and we have the opportunity to step into the dimensions of existence and get into touch with some basics which we can use personally in our relationships with our friends and partners and families and professionally. So this may be an add-on for those who work as counselors or psychotherapists. And I always liked, when I was a student, when I was at the beginning or during my professional life, to have short seminars to learn something from all different types of psychotherapy. And this is so inspiring, and I could add this or that selectively, not everything, but this is something how we can expand our knowledge and our skills. But we do this, of course, much more profoundly in our trainings. What I'm giving here in one day is the theme of 2 years of basic training in existential analysis, where we not only reflect the bit of philosophy, practical application, but also work on ourselves on the level of self-experience. That because especially in a phenomenological approach, in an existential approach, it is important that we do not apply techniques in a distant way, but that we are personally present, that we offer an encounter, that we are open, that we can receive the clients, the patients with their difficulties, with their pain, with their personality disorders, and they are sometimes very hard to bear, to endure with their difficulties and their way of interacting in a, I would say, pathological, because very hurting way, in a way where they are not even themselves happy about acting that way. And the therapist and the counselor must be strong enough to face it, to take it, to be with it, and to offer one's own being to that what the client and the patient is producing, is applying. They can only act in their way of feeling and experiencing. They cannot act normally or calmly. Then they wouldn't be clients or patients. But they have this difficulty, and this difficulty is in their bones, in their muscles. It is embodied. It is in their psyche. They feel it that way. They suffer from it, but they cannot step out. And they need somebody who is encountering them and who is maintaining in maintaining the calmness, is residing, dwelling in himself, herself, so that by on out of this basis they can show as a role model how to deal with oneself. The way how the therapist or the counselor deals with their client is the role model how they should learn how to deal with themselves. We in existential analysis, in this phenomenological approach, are looking at that, we understand our presence and our dealing with our clients in that way, that we interact with them personally, not psychodynamically, not by facades, not by techniques. We sometimes apply a technique or a method for treating a special difficulty where we need some tools to break up the closed doors, or to open to make a breach into something that new life can come in. But in general, our attitude is to be ourselves in the presence of our clients, and they are welcome, they are allowed to behave as they feel, the way to be as they are, and to show their suffering, their problems, their pain, and we first accept it, we first think it, and let them give them the knowledge that they may be as they are. They are accepted and welcomed, also they behave in a difficult way, they are so depressive or full of anger or anxiety or reacting borderline strength type which is so hard to withhold and to hold on. Therefore, our training is primarily an education of one's own personality, because the main tool in counseling and psychotherapy is not any technique, any method. The main tool is the personality of the psychotherapist, of the counselor. And this personality must be trained. The cognitive knowledge is not even secondary, it's tertiary, or not even later, maybe. It's good to be intelligent, of course, and to know something. But for establishing a therapeutic relationship, a counseling relationship, the knowledge doesn't help us. We must be who we are. Otherwise, it's not a true relationship. And when we don't have a true relationship, it is not a therapeutic relationship. And this is specific for humanistic psychology, that we try to be authentically ourselves, as Carl Rogers described it so perfectly. Or in Gestalt, they also try to encounter, and in existential analysis. And the phenomenological attitude means phenomenology, what a terrific word, a philosophical word from Greek, ancient Greek. Phenomenology means what appears. We let it appear, we let it come. This is the most basic description, just to give a hint. We look at how is it reaching me? What is the impact? What impression do I get? What is my subjective impression of the client or the patient? This is the basic attitude in all phenomenological approaches. So we are subjectively dealing with our clients and patients. And we are not going to explain them why they behave that way, how it is connected with the childhood, and how it is connected with their expectations. Later, at the beginning, we do not explain. At the beginning, we try to understand. To understand means I can feel what moves you. I can see the value which is so important for you that you behave that way. I can understand your aggression because I can feel how difficult it is for you in the presence of your partner, when the partner starts speaking to you in this way again and is evaluating you, etc., that you feel so odd, so small, like a child. And in your childhood, you had already similar experiences which are still vivid, which are still living in you. And now you experience the same. And now I can understand that it is so difficult for you, because it is still burning, this pain in you, and it is reactivated in this actual situation. So it is a double pain, the childhood pain and the actual pain, and I can understand it. And out from understanding, it is much easier to come to cognitive explanations, to connect it with knowledge, etc. But the basis must be this being present, personally present, and that means not cognitive presence primarily, but primarily presence with one's heart, with one's feelings, with this openness in which I allow myself to get the same feelings that the patient has, the client has. This is not so easy. I allow myself that I start to feel your pain. In existential analysis, this is basic to come close to the client or patient. That I do not want to keep myself in a distance and not being touched personally. In the contrary, I open myself. This is phenomenology. I open myself to let happen, to take part, to share, to be with the client and to feel what he or she feels. Of course, there is a difference. I don't have to live with them. I do it for an hour. This is much easier than to live with it all the time. Therefore, it's easier to endure, to bear. But even for an hour, it can be quite difficult. Especially when I have some similar experiences in my biography. This can trigger my form of pain. And then I start to treat the patient or client for preserving my heart, my feelings from what they feel. And this is more counter-transference than psychotherapy. But how can we train counselors and psychotherapists in a way that they are able to do that? This is the big, great question in all training. And it is especially challenging and an approach which is not based on techniques like CBT or psychoanalysis. Is much more technical in the procedure, human or even systemic therapy. In where systemic therapy is maybe closer to the humanistic approach. The humanistic approach works with personal encounter, with personal dialogue, works mainly with the presence of the therapist. And EA especially is bringing it into the point or lifting it up so much that we say not just dialogue, but dialogue in Rogerian movement, you must be authentic as a therapist and have unconditional regard to the client, etc. This is very basic, we totally agree with that. But we go even maybe a bit further and say, and open your heart and let your allow the client or patient to have an impact upon you, to act upon you, and you look at your feelings. And out of this, give an authentic, personal answer, description of what is going on in you, so that the client can see how, what it is, the effect of their behavior on other people, and how it works within oneself, and what we perceive essentially. Because phenomenology comes to the result that the understanding, it comes to the result of an understanding, but understanding on a phenomenological basis means to have seen what is essential in this context, what is essential for this person, for in this situation. View of the essential is the shortest description of phenomenology. So this is our approach, and this is our handicap. This is, of course, much more difficult to learn than techniques along with guidelines. Also, psychoanalysis is also very difficult to support. People have to be trained if they can support it. So we want to develop ourselves, to get to know ourselves, to see how we deal with the basics, the fundamentals of our existence, of our being oneself. And out of this, then we train, we learn methods and applications, and we train how to deal with the client, and how we can work with them. Therefore we need 2 years for this, what we do in 1 day today. We are quicker today, but of course not, we cannot go so much in depth. And then we have 2 years for the specific treatment of disorders like anxiety, depression, addiction. This is the backside, the background, or the other side of the normal, healthy functioning of the human being. When we are blocked in one of these dimensions, then we develop symptoms. We are not in a fluid dialogue with the world and ourselves. To develop this basic capacity for psychotherapy and encounter and understanding, we must develop a good inner dialogue, a dialogue with ourselves. We understand our being there in a double way. We are living in 2 worlds. I, as a person, am connected with the outer world and the inner world. Person.
Thank you.
I am in a constant dialogue with the world around me, which is given to me through the 5 senses, or maybe 6. And I am in a constant dialogue with myself, looking at what is it saying within me to what I experience in the outer world. This inner dialogue, this is the foundation for being able to have a real, productive, fruitful outer dialogue. And therefore we see in existential analysis the main goal for psychotherapy, to help people to develop a good inner dialogue. Without good inner dialogue, we do not have the basic tool to lead a healthy life and a fulfilling life. We must speak with ourselves, be in contact, in talk feel what is going on and speak with myself inwardly. We are this is now our basis here. Yeah, sorry for the interruption. So let us practice this for 1 minute, right now. We all heard what I was telling you. And even I heard what I was saying. Mm-hmm. How is this impacting me? What is that moving within me? I may have a feeling of, is this important? Or I may have a feeling of rejection. This sounds quite stupid. Or I may have a feeling like, this sounds to me very natural. This is, of course, this is obvious. This is what I do all the time. I may have a feeling of being touched and saying, like, well, this is inspiring me somehow. I could do that a bit more often. I could practice it, or I even should, or it's so good to hear that it brings me back to something what I lost. Also, you know, this is inner dialogue. It is different in each of us. But it is so important. It is more as important as what I told you. Because with this inner dialogue, you are going to appropriate, to connect, to bring it into your existence, into your life, what you heard. You make it personal. You make it yours. And it is so important that we live our life, not a prescribed life, not a demanded life. Our life, which comes from the inside, from within me, where I can feel this is me. Can you be yourself? Can I be myself now with what I heard? In principle, this is the same what we do with our clients. We listen to the clock and start the inner dialogue. And this dialogue is tracing, opening the path for the counseling, for the therapy. So this is a short introduction into our practice, which starts with my being myself, in our approach, of course. There are other approaches. People who prefer more the technical work, they will have a bit of hard time in EA, and maybe they can work better with other tools than EA or other approaches. So it's also important that we find the right ground where we can stay and grow and develop best. Not everyone is in the right place in existentialism. But when with this approach, I will lead a more personal life or in my private life. And this approach is, of course, makes profession very interesting. I'm working since almost 40 years with patients and clients, and it is still interesting for me every day. I know anxieties, hundreds. I could describe the symptoms and the problems what they have often better than the patients can do. They had it for the first time. I hear it for a hundredth time. So I know it. But this would be bothering, of course, if I say, oh, 567th time. Yeah, okay. I have to let them speak, etc. But I have colleagues who told me that they stopped doing psychotherapy because it's so bothering. Now they come into that problem with their parents, and I know this resistance comes up, and I know it will last at least 7 weeks, and we will for seven weeks we will work on this resistance. No, this is, the anxiety is not interesting for me. For me it's interesting how this person experiences the anxiety, deals with it, thinks about it, speaks about it, and where I can get a little door which is a little bit open to enter into his or her way of experiencing and feeling, and how I can give them something or bring out something so that they can do a next step. And this is interesting. It's more interesting than a crossword. It's real life. And, you know, this is so fantastic. And then it also moves me when I see the pain, when I see how it is for me, put it aside, but then what I perceive from the other, and how skilled I am, how well I can do my apply my helping. This is interesting every day, and so it's fantastic to be a psychotherapist because it is so enriching my own life. Ultimately, I should pay my clients. Yesterday, we spoke about the main focus of the existential analytical approach, which is to activate the personal freedom, which comes ashore by the term of inner consent. In inner consent, this is out of my freedom, my yes to what I do. This does not mean that I agree with whatever happens around me or with my faith, etc. But it means that I have a yes to myself, and out of this inner connection to myself and this inner agreement to myself, I start to work, to behave in this world. And so, inner consent is the focus. And we have seen that inner consent sometimes is not easy to reach, to get. And then we have to work on the basis of the inner consent, the four dimensions of existence. The world, the life, me as a person, and the context in which I am acting. Now, I would like to go to all these four fundamental dimensions of existence and to open the door for the practical work and to focus a central, a pivotal point in each of these fundamental dimensions. The first dimension to come to a fulfilling life is we have to deal to check reality. Existential life means to be really there in this ambient surrounding, in this history, in this situation where my life takes place. And here I must adapt, live, know the processes, the laws, the ongoings. Otherwise, it could become dangerous and I could be killed if I cannot move, I do not know how to move on the street in London, I will be killed by the cars. So it is dangerous, this world, and we have to protect our life. And so, and now, what can we do to come closer to this world? So we start with, or this dimension has to deal with my being. And in each dimension of existence, we have a fundamental understanding of the dimension. The fundamental question, the fundamental existential question of connected with my being there is, I am there, I'm here, but can I be there? Can I means there is a space open. What is needed from me? Many things are fixed in our life. The house is stable, it is there. The family in which I'm born or in which I live is there. These are givens. But do they allow me to be? Can I really be under these circumstances? This is the basic, or the ultimate question of the connection with this world. For me, as an existential being, the question is, okay, it's there, but can I be with that? Can I be with a partner who is not faithful? Can I be with my heart attacks? Can I be with my cancer? Can I be with my child which suffers so often from asthma and doesn't sleep in the night? Can I be having so little money? Can I be with my biography, with my pains of my childhood? Do they allow me to be? Do they give me enough space? Do I feel safe enough? Do I feel strong enough? Do I feel that I have the skills and the capacity to do what is intelligent, good, fruitful, successful? Or I'm going to repeat in a stereotypical manner again and again my shouting, my phobic reactions, etc. And I often and again cannot do what I really want. And then I don't feel free when I cannot do what I want to do. When I don't have the capacity, when I feel blocked by the circumstances, by the experiences, then I'm not me. It will not lead to a fulfilling life. I may somehow survive, which is already a success. I'm sometimes really touched by people who just made it to survive under so difficult circumstances. So it doesn't mean to develop it, but the achievement, but to look at, can we improve something? And this is our task, to make it a bit better. It need not be ideal, but that from day to day a bit better. This is the therapeutic attitude. From day to day, try to make it a little bit better. What can I do that I can be with my conditions under these circumstances? And here, there are many issues related to it. what gives me protection? How well am I protected? What gives me a space where I can be, etc.? What gives me support? It keeps me up, it holds me up, it gives me the strength, etc. But one activity, a psychological personal activity, is very central in this. This is acceptance. When we cannot accept something, then we have, this is out from our, I take it out from our teaching, we can't develop it here, but I, just to make it practical, then it means I cannot accept this. This doesn't let me be. Then I cannot be. When I cannot accept the infidelity of my partner, this means simply, with this fact, it's so hard to be together with the partner. When I cannot accept the problem I have in the working situation, when I cannot accept my sleeping disorder, when I cannot accept my cancer, so many things, we are asked the existential question coming out of, emerging from the situation. Can you be with that? Can you live with that? In other words, can you accept it? Existentially, in an existential understanding, acceptance means simply this gesture. Okay, it is there. It's an ontological answer. It is a dealing with ontology, with the being. This is there. This is my reality, or better, more philosophically, this is my actuality. It is there. And I apply a great activity. I say yes to the fact that this is there. But I have this problem first. That I get a nice compliment, that somebody loves me, or that I love somebody. It's not always easy to accept that when I'm in another relationship and I start loving another person. Anxiety comes up. Can I be with this when the reality, my actuality changes in such a way? Can I be, survive, really be, safely be with that? Or what is going on to happen? So, to accept means to let be. To let be is ultimately an unconscious decision. This is something what I do out of my freedom. I don't have to. I do it because I intuitively feel I can let it be. I can say, yes, it is there. These are my circumstances now. And so I can let it be. Because I can also be. Ontology, all is on the level of being. The being of the object, the being of the situation, and my own being. We are connecting being with being in acceptance. It's a great thing. Sometimes situations are very difficult to bear and consume and cost a lot. Then we don't have the feeling of just accepting. It's too difficult. It's too heavy. It's such a load. In that case, acceptance is, remains still the question, but it subjectively converts into endurance. Endurance is also accepting, but it means that it is so heavy that it takes all my effort to just remain there, to just be there, and to not go away, to endure conflicts in a partnership, to endure a difficult boss, to endure a terrible headache, means I let it be. But it needs so much energy that I am concentrated totally in, and I have the power. Until how long can I still be there? And when comes the time that I cannot bear it any longer, and then fall apart or die or whatever, it's over. I bear it, I endure it until the end. Endurance is an act, it's not resignation. It's the opposite of resignation. It's that what we still can do when we cannot do anything else. It's the last activity. Until dying, we can lead our life personally, on a personal level, by saying, I'm going to endure that. I want to remain on my place and not to see, to remain. And I take all my effort to remain, because I still have a feeling it's good to remain there. When I don't have the feeling that it's good to remain there, I shouldn't endure it, and I should fight it, or I should go out. So, now we come to the practical. You are somehow tuned into this existential task now. Acceptance. How well can I accept? How often do I have to deal with difficulties in acceptance? What are things where I have a hard time to simply accept and to let it be? And why is it so difficult? Simply speaking, what is my experience with acceptance? How well? How much am I aware of this being a capacity, a free capacity? And how well am I trained in it? And when you can deal with that question for yourself, you have a tool in your hand to speak about this basic question with your clients and patients. The more we know about ourselves, because they are like we are, probably they have a bit more difficulties than I have now. But the grammar is the same. The problem is this big or that big. So it's good to study in the closest relationship, which we have, the relationship to ourselves. It does not mean to judge. It means just to observe. What do I know about my capacity of acceptance? Am I accepting too much? That is also a possibility. I accept, I let be too much. Am I accepting too little? Am I too narrow? Too anxious? Too preventing? Am I well balanced? Do I have special difficulties in some area? How would that be for you to work on this in small groups of three people two or three people for 20 minutes. Is that okay? So choose your partner, it may be your neighbor, it may be somebody else with whom you have already eye contact or so in the group, and then in 20 minutes. Yeah, thank you. After 20 minutes, we have a collection of these of some questions, and then we go on with the second and the third and the fourth fundamental motivation during the whole day, and we will always give a short introduction and then work in small groups. Thank you.
Is it better to work with somebody you don't know?
It doesn't matter.
Is it?
As you like. Beautiful concept.
I think it's a very good time.
I'm going to go to the next one. I'm going to go to the next one. I'm going to go to the next one. Grazie.
Okay. Just to make use of a couple minutes before we go into the break, if there are questions, comments. Yeah, yes, please. It is not filmed. This
no,
is
no, 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 I don't think there's a very quite simple question on our side. We would like to understand, like you mentioned that basically during an hour when you're with a client, you experience suffering. So the question is like how to retain yourself if you do like for example 5 consecutive sessions and you're suffering with every single client, because by the end of the day it's for example when I used to be a nurse and which didn't put me back to the doctor position, is that I was suffering so much with every single patient, you know, while like going through their path, etc. So for me it was very hard to retain myself in the full capacity when you come back home. And then because it's been like a very long year for me, and that like being a nurse in a neuropathology department where people got disabled and you have to explain them that you're never going to be walking again. It feels like a little bit like a resemblance to what you're saying, like being with client and suffering. So when we discussed in the group, we realized that the question is like how to retain yourself, not like keep drawing
and how
suffering.
How can I accept it?
How can you accept it and how you get back to your own reality and still being helpful?
You make the point for what is the reason why so many professionalists in social professions have burnout, because they did not learn to come to this distinction of the self and other. Self-other distinction is basically it. And when I'm trained, I have gone through these experiences of our clients and patients. I have dealt with the possibility of death, etc. And this is what we are going to train in our clinic, that we are familiar with the themes so that we have first own experiences and work them through. And then I'm not occupied with myself, with the situation, what would I do if I had a brain injury or couldn't move anymore, would be paralyzed for the rest of my life. These are, of course, human questions which we have to deal with in our life. and in supervision when we deal with our clients and patients, to come to get along with that, what it means for my life, and that makes me open, that I can be open, that I can be with your suffering and feel it. And I'm not, at the moment, no longer occupied with what would I do. I can put it aside. I've worked it through, I know it more or less already. Then I can be with you. And then I can empathize and say, I can feel your pain, knowing that it's not my pain. But I resonate with you. And if we cannot make this distinction, we are suffering too much. It is consuming us. We wouldn't be able to work even 5 hours a day. And the situation of a nurse is much closer to the patient than the physicians normally are. So they get to know the suffering of the patient much more intensively than normally doctors do. So it's perfect. Thank you for this question.
A question is somehow related to the previous one, which relates to inertia in a way. So if you have to work with different people, either as a therapist and you have like a person from 9 to 10 and the next person from 10:30 to 11:30 and so on, assuming you afford the half an hour break. And the first person comes in and they have this devastating situation, so you put into that state so you can empathize and extend yourself to be one with the other person's circumstances and feelings. Then the next person comes back for the next session with this amazing scenario where they get married and they kind of just try to do self-development, so they don't have any troubling issues. Mm-hmm. They want to just explore and grow. And you already have the previous state. So, I mean, as a human being, and these states are, at least from a neuroscience and biochemistry point of view, they're driven by chemicals, they go through your body, endocrine system. So there's certain inertia, at least chemically, if not mentally, that will exist in you. So how can you quickly switch to the next state to be effective and be able to apply the same process?
I try to come into an end in each single session. And each session has a structure and has a form. The initial part, then the in-depth part, then to at the end of, let's say, about the half or two-thirds of the session, I'm working on with the client, with myself, what can they do actually? What can be the practical result out of this session, that at the end of the session the client has something practical to work on, to continue? Because most part of the most work in the psychotherapy session is done outside, at home, with themselves. And the psychotherapy session is just to give them an input. To trigger something, to show a way where they can try to continue. And so I'm also closing myself the session about 15 minutes before the end by looking at what does it mean practically? What can you do? What is the result? And so already 15 minutes before the end, I am closing the gestalt. I'm winding it up. And I often say to the patient, now, before we come to the end, what was the most important for you, etc. And so we are already looking at the process which we have undergone. And so I'm quite ready when we finish the session. I rarely think of my clients and patients outside my session. It's in the session, I'm totally there, and I'm closing the session. And afterwards, I have a few minutes or even now, and have the next plan, then I'm opening up, and this is like I'm switching onto another channel on the television. And of course sometimes it happens that I'm too inert. I'm still somehow emotionally stuck with the previous client. But it really lasts longer than a few minutes, maybe 5 or even 10. And this is also training, of course, exercise. When you do it for the first time, you need much more time in between the sessions. But over the years, you get trained to switch, to close and to reopen. It's important for the psychohygiene of the therapist. And when we are pondering on the themes of our patients and clients, coming home in the evening or so, then think about, haven't I been quick enough to come to a closing of the session with my client? Or is there something which is occupying me personally, which needs a bit more self-reflection or supervision? This is important because I want to live with what I do, and when it is impacting me, then it tells me turn towards it, take more time for it. This will be our next step of the work.
Mm-hmm. Can I add to this as well? Also another thing. It's also writing a few notes.
Right. I write very much.
Writing, and then it goes on the paper. So it is transferred on the paper and it's closed.
Thank you, Marlene.
I do that and it's really helpful.
Yeah. I also do that. I write a lot, literally, word by word, what clients say, because it is so important to have their words, how they express it. And I make notes about my thoughts, my remark, about what I'm coming back in the next session or in a future session. And so it is all recorded, all in a file.
And then sometimes if the clients wants to come in a month's time, then it's helpful because you pick up the notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important note for me is the end piece. What was the closure?
Mm-hmm.
What was the client meant to do? And what did I at the end? What was the reflection with the client? And so then that's helpful then. And you're back to the world of the client.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I add one as well? Mm-hmm. I think the writing is very important. If you do have the luxury of half an hour, then I think this can be useful to change space, like get out if you have that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Like go into the garden or something, mm-hmm. go to the bathroom, or you can change something like that.
Thank you. Good question. Can you accept it when we make a break? Can you be with them? If you have difficulties, come to me. Go up till 11:30. 20 minutes before coffee.
That's
However, the communication
is not there.
We have 15:45 and we finish at 4:15.
breaks, half an hour or 20
minutes? 20 minutes. But I wouldn't put everything. It's difficult for me to accept to put so many important issues in the middle of important things.
What about so after? Do we have half an hour? No? Tomorrow, after we finish our retreat. Half an hour. After
there are many important things, and I don't do them in a rush and in the middle of in the corridor.
In the middle, no, but after.
No, you don't have a lunch break. It's too.
So we finish at 2:15.
Yes, we have
time till 3. Do we have time?
We won't finish at 2:15. 15 people start leaving, so we'll finish at 2:30, the earliest. Moving tables, clean room. So 2:30 is the earliest. So okay, what time do we have?
That's one, two chapters by.
First they will not
be much. This one is
Would you think BPS courses and lectures on the
that's the member that's that project of CPD. That's CPD is BPS what we talked about this company professional development states. We can get professional development states, then it's accredited by British Technological Society, then we can post to that group. But it's to be done.
The main question is accreditation.
Do you want some coffee? Or some you sure? Because I'm going downstairs.
Thank you.
100%?
100%, yeah.
Do you have choices for those?
or I don't think
it is indicated.
Yes.
I'm actually now writing a book about the economics of living in life, the rise and fall of the capitalist life syndrome.
Right.
So what I'm very interested in doing there, use a lot of the knowledge we have about meaning, and then use some of that knowledge of discovery. Slightly to say about the community, because one of the biggest challenges that I still find in the of means and therapies is quite individualistic and but it's a crucial start. And it's, I think that Elfrid's approach, when you really do it, he's actually politically very radical.
Yeah.
Because when you live with full inner consensus, such a thing as like poverty, like as you can see, I often find However, I also live in a world which probably don't understand it, they don't see that. And that's why I challenge. That's a sort of solution.
И даже язык иногда
That's a very strong community, and we are very much like supporting each other. And really, it's a community about how can you be yourself, how can you really be who you are inside
Separation of self and self.
So,
when you like yesterday, for example, I watched two films, and during those films, I cried my eyes out. Both of them. I'm still feeling drained from it. I know the answer to probably I do, but like, how much do you take from? Can I know how much of that is from the characters? How much is from my life?
When you cry too much, you feel you lost the good of your life.
Yeah, I felt it too. Yeah. But is it possible that you also, because I am
you retain an ultimate sense after the speech, because you knew that you are not the same.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
This is the most basic. Yeah.
Okay.
Emotionally, you were in the pool.
Yeah. Very much so. Okay. So is that the kind of thing you would learn or not?
You can learn.
To better him.
Yeah,
that I would like to.
To be aware of something. When you cried out your eyes.
Yeah.
And when you cried out,
and I still feel
the third time, then it becomes karma is karma.
Oh, okay.
Then you come. You work with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Because it was an immediate panic, that was the second time.
It's very,
Are we going to announce that the next thing is coming, or?
Announce what?
That now that the next thing is coming in a minute. You can start. But half of the group is doing it.
Yeah, actually, my head is a little. publisher of Sulamiti Live.
But it was it about
just my website that I've developed. Also, there's also my community, like, because I run
Okay, I think we should start, even though not everybody is back yet.
By the way, the best is if you can use the red one, because you can see the better on the internet.
Yeah,
the red one.
The red because the green one you can't really see. When I was yesterday,
yeah. I only had a green yesterday. There was no other color.
I think it's when I made you really big on my television screen, you were this big. And then I was
like, I can use the red one. Today I have a red one, not only.
I think the red one should be fine.
But yesterday we didn't even have a picture.
It was okay.
It was really good quality. Yeah. But it's always good quality.
Thank you for your comment on this.
Yeah, no, I like that people tuned into that because it is like, I think we really, yeah, I'm not British, so it's very easy for me to write.
Yeah, you're European. Okay. Let's get started. Welcome back.
They make this little announcement. Unfortunately, it's the centralized heating. So if you want the cooler, we need to keep the door open. So it's up to you.
Yeah, spring is coming.
We were cold yesterday. Yes. We never had business, so last time.
Yeah, okay, let's come back and let's get started with the second dimension of existence. This is the dimension of... keep the door open, please. Life. My life. We spoke about it yesterday. And again, we can ask, what is the basic existential question in this, on this behalf, on behalf of being connected with my life, of giving space to my life, giving life a chance to come through, to blossom, to flourish in my daily life, in my private life, in my internal life, in my relational life. What is it all about? What is the most basic question which I have to deal with? The fact is, I am alive. But life is not so much the question, what are the facts? Life is something we cannot count like individuals. There are 20, 30 individuals here we can count. Facts are givens, are entities, are being, is a being. But life has another quality. Life is hard to define. Life is something which is felt. And so, to connect with life, we must go over from the cognitive recognition of the facts to a felt closeness, to a relation, to a resonance with what is there. So, I am alive. But what does it mean for me as an existential being? It is the challenge of my relationship to life. How is my relationship? When I take the fact that I am alive, I was a child, I'm now in this age, I feel my heart beating, all signs of life. I have emotions, feelings, affects. I'm changing continuously. I'm tired, I'm asleep, I'm refreshed, I'm hungry, I'm full. Life is a continuous change. And I'm in love, and I have my needs, and I'm sad, and I'm suffering, and I'm full of joy. This is life. The basic question is, how is this for me? How? Not what. What is the first image? The fact. How is that what is there for me? What kind of relationship do I have with my feelings, my pain, my suffering, my being there with everything? How is it for me to be in the midst of this world, in my family, in my working place, in my inner world, and to see all these changes, these continuous changes, this flowing, this process, this growing, this becoming older, this getting wrinkles? How is it for me that I am alive? And now to come to the point, do I like it to live? If I ask myself personally, do I like to live? Do I personally like to be alive, to live, to be there? I haven't been asked. I'm somehow, as the philosophers, existentialists say, I'm like thrown into this world without having been asked. And now I'm there, and I have to live. But ultimately, I don't have to live. As a human being, I can decide over my life. I can take my life and kill myself. I don't have to live. This is the great challenge in evolution. For the first time in evolution, there are beings on this earth who do not have to live. Who are born, of course, not being even been asked. Now, I'm forced to deal with the fact that I'm alive, that I'm there and living with all these different feelings, with this nice and beautiful and wonderful and exceptional feeling, and the opposite, that is also frustration and pain and suffering and despair and loneliness and disorientation and what am I going to do with this life? And I have so much time, a whole lifespan. What am I going to do? Over centuries, people had to fight for their life to survive. And the richer ones, or the kings, the aristocrats, they had to fight their boredom. What to do with them? They go hunting, they make artificial fights in medieval times, and so the knights, just to kill their time. This was a great problem over centuries for the aristocrats. They made festivities and just to not be bored all the time when you don't have to work. And the rest of the population had to work strongly to just survive. Yeah, what am I doing with my life? But this is a later question. First, or underneath this question, is the question, well, I discover I'm there, I'm living. How is that for me? Do I like that? How is my relationship to life? It's not always pleasant. Existential life means to come to my own stand, to see, to find my position, because my position, this is a realization of my freedom. What do I think about? How do I feel? How do I accept? And what can I not accept? What is me in context of this dimension that I am living? Do I like it? After all, phenomenologically speaking, what is my intuitive perception of this life? Is life something good, ultimately? Or is it ultimately a hell? Sometimes it is like a hell. Not only in Syria, it can also be in a family, in a relationship, in a working place. In being just alone with myself can be a hell. We must be realistic. But is it a gift? Is it something good? Or is it a condemnation? And is this damned life, do I really have to bear that? And this basic relationship to life is crucial for my basic mood in being there. When I don't like to live, but I'm there, Italy. It's impressive. It's depressive me having this burden to carry a life what I don't like, where I have the feeling that in itself it's not good, it has no value. Bit of pleasure sometimes, but that's it, not more. And when I'm depressed, even what is pleasant doesn't please me. It's gray, it's without colors. This is all in this dimension of my relationship to life. And we have, all of us have an intuitive, mostly unconscious, for most people it's unconscious, but it's still there, an intuitive feeling of understanding of my understanding of the quality of life. Am I grateful that I can live? And do I want to live longer? And can I continue in that way how I live? I didn't make my life. I received it. All important things we receive. But my task, my existential task is to relate to that what I've got. And to open up and to distinguish, to capture, is it of value or not? This is my task. How do I perceive it? We all are experts of life. We all have enough experience of what it means to be alive. The newborn doesn't yet have that experience. But as soon as we are conscious enough, we have, or we even in the first year of life, we feel if it is good or not. But we are of course not aware of it. But as adults, as children already, we get an experience if, and we feel if we like to live or not. And it depends a lot of how I was treated from others, of course. When I wasn't in a loving relationship to my mother, to my parents, to my family, it's of course much harder to feel the quality of life. So, do I like to be here? What is my inner answer? What is it saying? It's nothing I can decide upon. It's something I have to perceive. Is this good? According to my own experience, I cannot delegate this question. I have to live it through. I have my impression. I cannot make others live my life. Not even my loving mom can live my life. And not my daughter or son can live my life. And not my partner. I have to suffer it through and to feel the joy and the pleasure and the pain. I'm inseparably connected with my life. I am that life which I have. And how do I perceive it ultimately, profoundly? Do I like it, and is it a threat? So, in this dimension, all things turn around emotionality, feelings, emotionality and feelings are not only shadows of recognition or consciousness. They are a basic way of perceiving reality, because life is a reality. And the reality of my connection to life, my relationship, is perceived by my feelings. When we have feelings, we are in a relationship. When we are in a relationship, we have feelings. When we are in a relationship with my child, with my partner, with my client, we have feelings for this child, partner, client. We allow them to have influence upon us so that we get feeling, have feelings. They still evolve to feel something when we are together with them. Otherwise it's not a relationship. A relationship is not just thinking or organization. This is a very basic kind of relationship. It can be called relationship. But a real relationship is a felt thing. When we get feelings, something must have touched us. Without being touched, moved, we don't have feelings. And so the basic personal activity in this dimension is to turn towards what is there, to open up and to allow myself and to allow the other to touch me. We are coming closer to our work. Whereas the basic activity in the world is to look at, can I be there, and let be, to accept. The basic activity in the second dimension is to turn towards, really to turn towards you. This is already moving. This is, you feel and I feel something is starting, yeah. It is moving me and it is moving. I don't do more. I just turn towards you. Why is it so moving? Because when I turn towards somebody or something, I am reducing the whole attention and implying all my time to you. And I'm saying, my world are you now. For now, you are my world. This is enough. I'm here only for you now when I turn towards you, towards my child. How important it is for a child that mom or dad or the uncle or the grandma turn towards them, not just read newspapers and okay, yeah. No, turning towards to is so important, because then I convey to the child, you are my world now, not forever, not for the whole time, but now, for this hour, for this meeting, for this lunch which we take together, you are my world. And this is moving. This is touching. This is connecting with the life. I come close. I take up relationship. I enter into your life when I turn towards. And turning towards means having the readiness to be touched. I want to be touched. I want to feel you when I turn towards you. but turning towards two, we intensify our feeling. We bring in life into our life. This is the existential personal activity to bring in more life into our life by turning towards to what we do. Whatever I do, reading a book, I want to turn towards. Listen music, I want to turn towards the music. Then I capture life. Speaking with you, I want to turn towards you, that I can feel and see and perceive. And then life is resonating between us. And it is touching me, but what in me? In rare cases, it may be physical touch. But in most cases, it's not a physical touching. It's a psychological touching, a spiritual touching. Of what in me? Not of my body, my psyche, and my person. And in depth, my life. Turning towards who allows the object, the other, the situation to steer in my life. And when my life is moved, when my life gets into resonance, I have a feeling. Feeling is the expression of the moved life. Feeling is moved life. We have no other feeling. Feeling is always moved life. So we must be very attentive, careful for the feelings, because in the feeling, my life is moved. And when I can live with feelings, I am of course much more related to what I do. I'm much closer. I'm connected. I'm feeling. And when I have a good feeling, I feel a value. And when I have a bad feeling, I have a feeling of a loss of value, of a lack of value, of a non-value. So by feelings, we also perceive what is valuable. Valuable is what is brings a good resonance with my life. Valuable is what is nourishing my life, my relationship to the life. That I can say yes to my life. When I experience love, closeness, when I experience friendship, when I experience success, when I experience that I can do something well and I enjoy it, when I experience a good meal or just a sip of coffee, I experience, it's tasty. When life is such, I like it. In little things. Seeing the flowers, the heaven, the clouds. Wow, impressive. Seeing, catching the eye of my child for a moment. Oh, it's touching. It's moving. Everywhere. Life is sleeping and it can be detected if I am able to turn towards. It may be a second, but still turning towards. When I turn towards my client or my patient in the session, I'm there. And then full life is there. And we share that life. before we come to the practical question, you have a question.
Yes, I do. When you're saying about movement to another person, is that process has to be mutually responded? Because sometimes when you move to a person or to the reality that you're talking about, the other person may not be A ready, or reality may be different, but you're actually moving. Probably the good example would be parents and child relationship. When initially actually a child wants to have this attention, but at the age of 14, actually it's the other way around, when the parent moving towards a child, but the child doesn't want to have this relationship. So the question is, like, this movement, has it to be like mutual responsive?
In the age of 14, the child is already in the third dimension of existence. We will speak about that in the next dimension, in the afternoon. Because it's no longer the closeness and the relationship, but it's being oneself. To be detached from my mother, I don't want to follow just what she's saying. I want to start my life by my own. So this is, there is another theme comes up. It needs not necessarily a reciprocal turning towards me. Most often people react similar to my behavior. There is a symmetry in behavior. When I turn towards somebody, when I smile to you, the other person most often smiles back, but sometimes not. When they don't do, it may be hurtful for me. Because we can expect that the way I behave to others, they tend to behave towards myself. I can move towards a statue, turn towards a statue, and open up and look at the impression which I get. What feeling do I get? The statue is not turning towards me. I can turn towards my child, my partner, and say, are angry, separated, or closed, do not turn towards me, and it makes pain. It's hurtful. And I don't get back that movement. But on the other hand, I know turning towards somebody has quite an impact on them, even if he doesn't respond. But there is an impact. So I can do it as much as I can bear if the other does not respond to me. To apply this impact on the other and tell the other, you are important for me. I feel related. I don't want to be that way as it is. I show you this. And I know the other person is somehow touched by it, but it may be too hurtful for the other, because there are difficulties, problems we have to speak about first, that it becomes possible that the other also can turn towards you. Then we have to speak about it. So we can try, but watch it. Watch your own psychic health, your energy, your power. It can be too much for me. Then it is better to apply a distance. To live a bit apart, separated, for a time, for a day, for a week maybe, and then to try again when I have enough energy again and courage again to try. Okay, now on this is the issue on which I would like to invite you to deepen a bit this dimension. Looking at your own experience of life and your experience maybe as counselor as well, turning towards the central activity to bring in life into my life implies closeness. Because when I turn towards, I'm not just giving space and let be. No, I'm focusing. I'm leaning forward a bit. I try to come closer. What helps me? This is the question. What helps me to come closer to something or somebody or some theme. What helps me to come closer to my friend, my partner, my child? And what makes it more difficult to apply closeness, to come closer? What makes it difficult to me? What experience do I have? And what makes it easier to me? What experience do I have? And so we can learn from our own life expertise, because the same will be true to come closer to my clients and patients, or makes it difficult. It's just opening the door into this room of life, relationships, feelings, values, big theme, central theme in our life, of course. And I would propose to have another 20 minutes to work on this, also in small groups. You may remain in the same group, you may change as you like, as the others like. It's all valued, both is valued. To remain in the same group, we know each other already a bit, to speak with other people, to get knowledge with how other people think. It's more your personal preference to do this kind or that kind of group. And it's an experience of coming closer. Our question: what makes it easier for me to come close, and what makes it more difficult? You think you could work on this? Let's try.
May I ask a question just before mm-hmm. we go to group discussions? Do I understand you correctly that your idea of trying to do something and, you know, spending time on something is mostly about something really positive in my life? So what would you recommend, or what would be your take about something
negative?
Do you really kind of think
it's also needed? It's the same approach. When I turn towards something negative, to a loss, I start grieving. Grief is an active process of incorporating a loss, of bringing life back into a loss. And therefore, we grieve. Thank you. Good question. There is no life if there is no turning to loss. No psychically felt life. There is, of course, the biological life. This is always there. But the psychodynamic life. But this personal life, this taking up with life on a personal level, does not happen without turning to us, even in the negative side.
So just embrace your pain.
Yeah. And be with your pain.
I would like someone mature to help me with this exercise, who knows what they're doing, because I feel it would be beneficial for me. Is that possible? Since we are being set for this exercise.
What? Are you afraid of something? Do you see difficulty to enter the question?
Yes, I do.
The difficulty to enter the question?
I find it difficult, yes.
Uh-huh.
Now, for example, if you are in depressed state of mind, and in a way the question to this, do I want to live with no, you cannot possibly, you know, treat the other person with
yeah.
Because you need help yourself to turn your thoughts, yes, I do like living.
So then I may have the experience when I'm in a depressive mood, this makes it really more difficult to come close, to turn towards
because there is no things which actually you like seeing, but everything you see, it does not, you know,
right, right, it's not
the answer, yes,
cool.
It's
yeah.
All, you don't understand even why you're in this planet, in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's why you go to therapist and he's trying to turn you,
mm-hmm.
to unlock this,
mm-hmm.
and to find the things which eventually you might like seeing and which you get you out of depression.
Mm-hmm. So you have already seen, caught an element which makes it more difficult to turn towards. In a depressive state, it's really hard. And then we might, and helpful in such a case is when somebody else is with me and supports me, assists me, coming close slowly from outside so that I can start to turn towards me again and towards what is so heavy and painful in my life, and then the frozen state of a depressive feeling is melting, and spring comes up and is converting into a grief. And when grief is there, we are personally present. In grief, we are turning towards. And this is processing the cause of this depression, which was so over-demanding that I got stuck, frozen, and fixed. This is,
thank you.
Yeah. So this is a good description of one experience or one example how it may look like. You have the question, is it difficult to start with that question? Just, you don't have to go too deep. Just look at, what do I know? What makes it easier? Maybe when we sit in a quiet room, it's easier to come close to somebody.
It was general question.
General question. What is my experience? Yeah. Not too personal, because then we would enter deep in deeper self-reflection, self-experience, and even therapy. This we cannot do in one day, of course. But just to get a first notion, to open the door a little bit and to look into this room, what do I know, what helps me? Maybe it helps me when I'm sitting at the airport and somebody is sitting beside me, next to me, and we are waiting and the flight is in a delay, we have to wait another hour, then we are in the same situation and this can build bridges, and then I may start talking to my neighbor, say, this is really much, very much an hour more, we have to wait, and then we exchange on a mutual basis, yeah? Also having a mutual basis.
You get sympathy.
Yeah, then the most common mutual basis is the weather. Nice rain today. And so we over this way. But it can be helpful for somebody to come closer because I see the other person needs help. But for another person, this may be something which makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I have a question. You were talking about turning towards someone or something, but my question is, can this process imply turning towards yourself?
Also. Yeah.
Also. You don't need otherness.
Not otherness.
Towards yourself.
Also
as towards well.
Yourself.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, good that you speak it out. I didn't want to make it too complicated, but it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Let's try. If you think it's too much, go for a walk for now 15 more minutes and turn towards yourself and try. The question, what makes it easier or more difficult?
Fine.
to enter closeness, to turn towards something or someone. Okay.
I'll
send
it. Yeah, I guess it made me easier.
We have no specific theme to work on, but maybe.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Where you are, I'm going to go to the next one.
Difficult to step out of closeness. So cozy. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any comments or questions? Just to wind that up. Come to a closure.
Sorry, I have a question. From your yesterday lecture, and I think today you mentioned that the question, do I like, it's not only about pleasure, but it's also about your values. But to me, values, it's something as like cognitive construct. It's like super ego in Freud. Something which was interjected by society, parents, etc., etc. So what is your meaning then of the value? I think it's, I suppose it's different. It's
different.
More value than something was put on us. So which value you're talking about?
Did you have a coffee in the break?
why do you ask?
I'm asked. How was that coffee? Was it good?
Actually, this is a very good question. I'm trying to cut my coffee intake, and I had quite a conflict in deciding whether should I take this coffee this morning or not, because my desire is that I'm have this craving for coffee. I'm very addicted. Yeah. So if I ask myself, do I like it? I would say yes, I like it. But there is a thinking that, but it's bad for me.
It's not good for
your
health.
It's not good for me.
Yeah.
So this question, this dimension had a quite a created a conflict in me because I didn't know. But what I did, I bought it, and now I feel guilty.
This will be the next dimension. You're good. But was it good? The coffee you drank?
Not really. I don't mind the taste of coffee, but what I have this craving for coffee.
Yeah.
It's something
that addiction part.
Addiction part.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not the taste I like, but something else about Yeah. Maybe about the sadness. So,
yes. Was it pleasant?
A bit.
Yeah. So maybe you did it for this pleasant feeling which you get. But the coffee itself didn't taste good?
Not really.
So there is not much value in this coffee which you took.
The
good was the pleasant feeling for a moment or for an hour. This was good. What is good is the value. The value is an abstract definition of what we feel to be good. Good is value. Instead of value, we can use the term good. In philosophy, in the end of the 19th century, they stopped to speak about the bonum, the good, because it was overloaded by theology, philosophy, etc. And they started to speak about values. And but psychologically, for psychology, it's better to break down the term value to the subjective experience, which is good. What is good? This is a value for me.
Okay. I think it's better to ask myself, was it good, was it a value?
Yeah, because then you have all these things of intellect, etc. Education, and so on.
Super ego.
Okay. Yeah. Was it good? And you said it was a good question.
About coffee, because I was thinking about coffee.
This was the evaluation. Mm. You said this was not a bad question. Mm. It is a good question. Mm. So you have an intuitive perception of what is valuable or good. Mm. And in existential approach, we train people to trust their personal perception. When I feel it is good and see that it is nutritive to my life, feeding my relationship to it, this is existentially seen a value. Justice. Not this, friendship in principle is a value. Yeah, this is an abstraction of experience of a relationship to somebody who means it well with me and to whom I have good feelings and with whom I want to spend time. So this is the practical phenomenological value, and we can denominate it virtue. No, a hundred thousand, a thousand millisecond,
I struggle really with facing towards the society as such. From my personal belief, we're all somehow interconnected on some spiritual level, and we can't ignore if someone else is suffering. I even noticed observing that watching two lovers already makes me feel good. So I walk out of the street and I see too many sad faces. It's very difficult to live myself happily. And and when I face that, I feel hopeless because I'm not in the point of power to make decisions on society. And I'm not in a position where I can just, grab a person and shake him up, and they go too quickly through my face, but I notice the suffering in their eyes. So how to deal with that and accept it? Be somehow at peace with oneself when I can't lie to myself that now, or at least I have a feeling that now in the world there is more suffering than love, and when I face it, I just cry nights out of injustice.
It is hard for me to answer you this question, because this can be a question which comes out of a really great capacity and gift and sensitivity like artists have so for the humankind, for others, and so on. there are people who suffer throughout their life and write books and paint pictures and make movies or music. This can be something like this. I don't know. I can't really answer your question because I don't know from where your question really comes. It can be from this pole, but it can also come out from the other pole that you might have a bit too much pain in yourself or an attitude of I want to help too much. There are many beggars, I can't give them all what they need, and it's the same situation, our limitation, to struggle with our limitations. So I don't know the background, but it is a very important question. It may be the task of your life, or it may be something unresolved in yourself. Thank you.
Related to meaning and how we relate to a situation or other people, I think, or in my experience, meaning is driven and influenced by three different factors. If we think of or how we function as humans, one would be the cognitive level. So let's say you're a business executive and you have to make a decision, you look at the numbers, you say, well, option B looks better than option A, I have no emotion attached to it, no other things, so it's just a logical decision. And then my partner comes and says, well, although option B looks better, we have to go with option A because of the following constraint. Okay, I may not like it, but okay, fine, easy to make the decision. So I give it a certain meaning. Another situation is when I have an emotion attached to a situation, like my lover flirts with someone else and I feel a bit jealous, but it's not heartbreaking because I'm quite cool with it. But there's an emotion related to that situation. I don't like it or I like it. Right. And then the third situation would be like when it's the fight or flight or freeze kind of situation where the amygdala kicks in and it's like, you know, not at the like or not like level. It's like panic, deep sort of reaction to a situation, which drives the meaning of the whole thing in a different way than the previous, or the second or the first. So that's three different kind of things that influence the meaning, and I guess our response to them might be probably different as well. So what are your thoughts about this?
But what is your question?
The question is how you is there a one approach in terms of the, let's call it methodology, how you approach yourself giving or accepting the meaning or the situation in each of these three scenarios, or you have different approaches depending on what drives that that situation and inner state, so you can accept it and move forward.
You mean on a personal level or in a consultation situation with the client who brings up the question?
Personal first.
Personal first. I would ask you what matters you most. You don't have to follow the idea of your partner. You don't have to follow the emotions. You don't have to be cognitive, or you don't have, of course, when there is flight and panic, I'm exposed to a situation. This is maybe no more the level of making any decision. I will make the decision afterwards. So the third element, or the third approach, is something that happens to me, where I am more a victim than an actor. But the other is, why do you make the decision just logically? If you think it is important to make this decision logically, make it. But if you experience that your partner comes with more emotion or other views and says, no, not B, A is better than B because this is more pleasant or more important or so, and maybe not so strategic, then you're confronted with another view. And I'm checking again, is the way how I made the decision still corresponding to me? Do I still feel and think that it is obvious, important to me? Then I remain on my position. But when I see what the partner brings up is an enlargement of my own view, it makes it broader, richer, and brings something what I didn't have in my consideration. Then I say, oh, this is good. Yes, I follow this. So ultimately I don't see a problem. I'm in a process. And it may not be right, my decision, but for the moment it's the best one I can see. And when I get more information by a partner who gives me more information, then I decide again, is this for me important enough? Or maybe not the content is so important, but my relationship to her. And I want to gain her, and I say, okay, do what you want, but I can be with you, and this is more important than what we do. Also, yeah? Life is so complex, and it's a miracle that we can move in it, in this complexity. And of course we can gain more from it or less from it. And this is what we want to learn, to gain the most possible values. And in existential point of view, to be myself, truly myself, is really on the top. Because if I lose myself, what is then the rest? And for what did I do? Is this an answer?
Yeah. And then to your question, apply to yourself or to someone that you want to help, especially in the third scenario where that person goes into that panic mode repeatedly. Every time they run into that situation or similar, they go there. And there's a complete shutdown of any cognitive capacity. And you want to help. So what would be your approach in that case?
I would do panic therapy. This is a specific procedure consisting of a variety of steps which we go through that the person can understand why it happened and what are the triggers and what the person can do preventing the situation and in the situation and after the situation, and then train it, and then the person will come out. It will last, a therapy of panic disorder lasts, the shortest is 3 to 5 sessions. Most often they need about 10, but rarely more than 15. In that case, in those cases, there are other disorders intertwined with it. Yeah. Personality disorders, for instance. But if it's a pure panic disorder, something can go very quickly with our procedure. Yeah. Thank you for your question. An hour, and we will meet again. Enjoy. Embrace. Love. And we will be back. We start we start at 1:45.
I just introduced you
a long time ago.
I told you about
I write a lot, I go to so much. Yeah, there isn't one I do my kind of research on stress and burnout, so you work on burnout is my old volume I am big enough how to coach, so I am big enough.
It is really nurturing to be near your workshop. That's also actually what I also needed after my incident last Friday, and to have like a space here again to return and asking, are you able to connect also with myself again? Like your questions really helped me actually process my experience. So that's very helpful.
I also think that all this experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Experience.
Yeah.
How many days are you here for?